little free form here. I'm going to give a, I don't know, 5 minute, 10 minute thing maybe to fill in some of the holes from the keynote presentation that I just gave, and then turn it over to Kai Hushka. He's our organizer for Hawaii, Oregon, and Washington, and so does work in those places. The idea for this workshop is not to really be a conventional workshop. It's to actually find places where this stuff can take hold in your community or elsewhere, and then to start talking about what that looks like as a beginning step towards us actually helping you. One of the reasons why we stopped talking at conferences like these was because we had workshops for entertainment value, and it's always good for people to enjoy stuff. I enjoy stuff when I go to conferences, but we're especially interested in places where it's going to touch the ground. And so that's the point of this today. So a couple things I didn't have time to cover at the talk. Generally, these talks, you know, 45, 50 minutes, maybe a little longer, but they're a condensation of 15 hours of these Democracy School trainings. So who has been through Democracy School here in this room? Wow. Okay, that's impressive. All right. So for others maybe asking what the hell is Democracy School, Democracy School, there are two-day trainings that we run. They're Friday evening, all day Saturday. And essentially, they start with the regulatory system and talk about how the regulatory system funnels us like cattle into a chute and then puts a bolt through our head at the bottom with the regulatory points, is what we call it. And then on Saturday, we track the history, because it's really an attempt to answer why. You know, when you're up against something in the community, why do you not have certain rights when you go up against the corporation? And so it's an attempt to answer that by going all the way back to the 1600s. So we look at English law principles, and then we actually bring them forward through the Constitution, and then show how those doctrines are still very much alive today, and how your impact, the impact of you from those doctrines, is very much the same as it was 400 years ago, and that the doctrines have in fact expanded and enlarged, so they're more powerful today than before. So it's our understanding and our belief that you have to know how the system is structured first before you begin to actually take it apart. And so that's what the Democracy Schools are about. We've graduated about 5,000 people through them, and we've taught them in 24 different states at this point. We've also taught them in Northern Ireland and did a couple sessions in Italy and different places around the world, because folks are interested in that kind of knowledge as well, especially in other legal systems that are based on English common law. So those are the Democracy Schools. The other piece I didn't get to cover was what's exactly in the ordinances. You know, we talk about local lawmaking. As you guys can probably figure out at this point, the law itself is not what the organizing is about. The law itself is just ink on paper. The organizing is up here, because it's really, you know, my predecessor, Richard Grossman, who gave a presentation here 10 years ago, I think, who billed himself as a historian, used to say that the major work that has to be done today is psychological demolition. It's actually about separating people from what they believe about this place. Because until we can actually do that, then the new activism doesn't get born. So if you're stuck in the old frame, you never move into the new one. And this work is about parting people from that old frame with real life experiences about how the frame is working. And I think as the environment gets worse, as we suffer ecosystem collapse, we're to a point where more and more people are able to hear that. But right now, the only people that can hear it from our work over the last 15 years are the folks in affected communities who are being hit with the thing that they're trying to stop. I've given up hope on the progressive liberals to actually put their arms around any of this stuff. And so we've had fights with the Sierra Club and with other major environmental groups who actually tried to stop the organizing in the United States in certain places. And believe it or not, actually tried to stop the Rights of Nature stuff from moving in Ecuador. So we had the international environmental organizations who met with us at 1 o'clock in the morning to try to convince us to drop the Rights of Nature language from the constitutional stuff, because they thought it endangered their ability to run the regulatory US-style legislation that they wanted to put into place.
Slice and dice, cut the baby in half.
Thank you, Tim. And so that's been our experience. That's where we come from. We're looking for people with similar philosophy, but we're also looking for people who are going to put in 20, 40 hours a week to actually make it happen, because none of this is easy. And when you're in a municipality and the municipal officials say, well, we're going to get sued and it's going to bankrupt us and your taxes are going to go up, all those fear stuff, you know, the jobs and the government's going bankrupt and your tax, all that fear shit has been around for a long, long time. They've perfected it on the other side. They know exactly what to do. They know how to access it. And over the past 15 years, we've used some of these states and localities as a laboratory to figure out exactly how the attacks come in, and then exactly how the best way is to customize the ordinances so that they become liberation documents. They're organizing vehicles. They're not just what's on paper. And then how we use the litigation process to actually carry those ordinances into court in a way that actually opens people's eyes up. One of the things I didn't get to talk about in that room, in the ballroom, was that in addition to the litigation that's been filed against these ordinances, in Pennsylvania, we had the state legislature take steps to strip municipalities of any power to adopt local ordinances on issues like agribusiness operations. It was in the form of a law called ACRE, and it actually empowered the Attorney General of the state with your taxpayer dollars to represent the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania in court against the municipality. So the way that this works is that the corporation picks up the phone in PA, they call the Attorney General's office, and the Attorney General becomes the plaintiff in the suit against your municipality, not the corporation. And so in PA, what happened next gave me a lot of hope, which was one municipality, after the Attorney General's office came in and said, well, you can't do this, we're going to sue you to overturn this ordinance that you've passed. They promptly turned around and passed an ordinance that suspended the Attorney General's jurisdiction to basically say, fuck you, if you're going to come in here and do that, we're going to exercise our lawmaking to actually take deeper steps towards that. So they said the AG can't enforce non-democratic laws like ACRE in our municipality. And so it's that mindset that has to, you know, I ask speakers all the time when I go to conferences, what are we doing to cultivate civil disobedience? What are we doing to cultivate non-obedience? What in our work does that? And we've attempted to put together a scaffolding, a framework that gets us to that place so that more and more people can actually understand how the system functions. I think we operate in a camouflaged system. Most people don't see how the system actually functions. Most people think that it works okay. Even when they're on the receiving end of stuff, they will still defend it as a democratic system. This work is actually about pulling those blinders off and doing it in a way that uses the energy of the state and energy of the corporation to automatically begin to radicalize not just five people at a time, but 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 in the communities. There's no better organizing tool when the Attorney General shows up in your municipality and tells you that you can't pass the law that you want to pass, or says, thank you, good citizens of X, that you've passed this law, but now we're going to sue you to remove it. That's an organizing tool for us. When people see the state operating that way, that it's not just a corporate problem, that it's a governmental problem. That shit is DNA'd a certain way to act in that sense. So two other things, and I'll turn it over to Kai. One is that in November of 2010, the city of Pittsburgh became the largest municipality that we've served as council to adopt one of our ordinances. So in the city of Pittsburgh, what they did was they banned fracking, so gas extraction within the city. They also recognize that ecosystems, like the Monongahela River ecosystem in the city of Pittsburgh, have rights to exist and flourish and evolve. In other words, created rights of nature within the city. And they also moved to refuse to recognize gas extraction corporations as having constitutionally guaranteed rights within the city of Pittsburgh. So, in other words, again, it doesn't matter what's necessarily on paper, but we have to think about that as an organizing vehicle. How do we draw the right fight? Because right now we draw fights, but they're not the right one. Then we all go home, lick our wounds, and then glom onto something else. This is actually about the long-term stuff coming into play. So what's in the ordinances? Well, in the city of Pittsburgh, it's a local bill of rights. It's a community bill of rights. It's a concept that this work is about expanding out state and federal bill of rights protections to actually expand out local bills of rights to include things like rights to nature, rights of nature, rights to a sustainable energy future, right to clean air, clean water, basically the rights that many of us in this room probably feel that we should have or that we already have, that we don't, that need to be built into an expanded legal structure. And the idea there is so that you're not always on the defensive, so you're not always a no group or a no movement saying we don't want that here, you know, being defensive. It's about actually being proactive and about putting in a positive vision. So if people ask you, well, what kind of community you want, you can say, this is the kind of community that we want, one that actually has this rights construct in it. The second part of the Pittsburgh Ordinance and these other ordinances are actually prohibitions on activities that violate the rights. So if you have a right to a sustainable energy future in your community, and fracking can't be done because fracking is inherently unsustainable because it's an extraction of a fossil fuel, then you can't carry out fracking within the municipality because it automatically violates that Bill of Rights. We actually write those prohibitions directly in. And the third part is what we call the insulators. The insulators are the direct attacks on the structure of law that would normally prohibit your community from banning fracking within your municipality. So challenges to preemption. They nullify permits issued by the state and federal governments that are issued in violation of the local ordinance. They have a Dillon's rule in there, an override saying that your community has a right to local self-governance, which in essence is a repudiation of Dillon's rule. And then they have corporate commerce and corporate personhood stuff in them, refusing to recognize that corporations can afford themselves of those remedies. What does that do when we get into court? Well, from an organizing perspective, it makes the corporation not just say that the fracking ban is illegal, which of course what they're going to do, but they also have to come in and validate each of those legal doctrines that's contained within the ordinance. And it's that litigation process that begins to get more and more people to actually see through the camouflage about how the system actually functions. So it's an organizing strategy linked to the legal stuff as a means of moving further and moving higher in the organizing. The other question that people ask sometimes frequently, you know, along with what's the point, if this is just going to get struck in court, well, the idea is that you find multiple levels for that movement. In other words, you pass an ordinance. If the ordinance gets struck, you move to home rule. We can talk more about home rule here, but home rule is essentially a process available to people in 40 states to rewrite or write for the first time local constitutions for their municipality. Basically, override your elected officials and write a new charter for the municipality. It's a higher law than an ordinance. It's harder to strike. It's harder to overturn. I mean, it doesn't mean it can't be. But it puts you in a better strategic position than just the ordinance. So we've assisted people with the home rule stuff as well as the ordinance stuff. And eventually, as I said in the talk, the idea is to be driving towards a place where we're eventually giving birth to a forced state constitutional change that actually recognizes a right to local self-governance for those communities, and then eventually build further down the road into the federal constitutional change that has to occur, which is about stripping corporations of personhood rights, commerce clause rights, all that other stuff that's mixed into that. So that's the idea. Some people look at the mountain and they say, well, that's way too high to climb, and I'm not gonna get involved in this because there are other things to do. We agree. It's a very high mountain to climb. It's got all those elements in it. One of the things that people have referred to our work as is a nonviolent civil disobedience through municipal lawmaking. It's about sitting down at a different lunch counter, and this time the lunch counter is your actual community, to seize it back from being property of the state to actually being a self-governing entity. That's a huge shift in American law. The retainer agreements we sign with municipalities say, we understand that that's a huge shift in American law, and we authorize you to argue that in the courts when we get there. But all to say, that's how these things are constructed. And a final word before I turn it over to Mr. Hushka, which is that it's become sexy to talk about the commons. We hear that a lot, you know, the commons. Commons this, commons that. One of the things that I had in my talk that I didn't mention was that when we use the word commons, we're actually using shorthand for common property. That's what the commons mean. We would submit to you that the word commons cannot be applied to nature or ecosystems. Because nature and ecosystems, if we're going to survive in this place, cannot be treated as property under the law. So this word is very dangerous. It's the commons, public trust stuff. I hope Mary Wood will forgive me for all of this, because a lot of the climate work that she does is based on public trust. And it's natural that we would climb into the property stuff, which has been developing since the Roman days, to try to seize a legal theory that we can use to protect the environment. The problem is that those foundations of that property law have been laid that way for a reason, which is they were never intended to be applied to ecosystems or natural communities. And we would submit that it's a dead end to try to use property law and common property concepts to actually protect nature. And as the last analogy, it would be like taking a slave and making the slave the common property of the community rather than the slave owner, right? So that the community could still, the slave is still property. The African American is still property under the law. It's just that they become common property rather than the property of the individual. And so we think that's the wrong model. And that's why our work takes off you know, the point where it does.
So we're going to leave quite a bit of time for questions, because I'm sure there are plenty of questions. And as Thomas is explaining, the only reason to be in appearance at these things, whether it's the workshop or a keynote, is really to see, are there actually people in the room willing to actually do something on the ground? And there are actually people in the room today doing this kind of work. Though Thomas talked about things back east, because this is where the stuff has come from, it's actually starting to sprout here in this region of the country. And for those that have been in this region and may not have been following this stuff, it may be surprising to hear that the wellspring of sorts, or the inspirer of other communities to be doing this work today, is Spokane, Washington. And Spokane's not known to be a very progressive community for those that know Spokane. But like those communities back east, folks have been dealing with their issues and running into the same kind of structure. Okay, they've been running into the wall and they were tired. And they decided that something new had to take place, that their work in essence wasn't getting to the end game that they wanted to get to. And when I say the work, it was people working with trying to create affordable housing in Spokane, people trying to protect the Spokane River, neighborhoods being subjected to unwanted development. Why does the system work the way it is? And the reality is almost any issue you drop into it operates pretty much the same way structurally. So these people were all running into the same structure, and they finally decided to come together collectively. So you had labor unions coming together with environmentalists, coming together with social justice people, coming together with neighborhood advocates. And they were actually the inspiration for the Bill of Rights sections that you find now in these ordinances. They were the first community to drive forward a community Bill of Rights. In essence, if this is about the community, we actually have to address these issues on a structural level. In essence, re-engineer what government is about, or really who government is for. Because as Thomas has been explaining, it's been, you know, the deck is stacked in one direction. And we see how it's stacked in the direction of the corporate few, over us the many, here at the community level. And again, it's usually the threat that gets us mobilized. And so I'm interested to see if there's folks in the room actually willing to do something on the ground. Like I said, there are folks here in Benton County and Lane County that are actually driving forward now with a food bill of rights. In essence, they're done doing the regulatory stuff and trying to keep out the harms, whether it's overuse of pesticides, whether it's genetically modified crops, whether it's the expansion of canola in areas which people understand you can't have happen because you're about to destroy a whole industry around organic seed production, and looking to see how that state structure continues to validate the destruction at the local level. And again, no matter what issue you run into, it's going to operate the same. And so these people are actually creating new law and are beginning to drive that forward to take on all the structural stuff that Thomas talked about and that we'll continue to explore here. So my role is to come in and help support these communities, to do some of the more foundational educational stuff, to help with the legal stuff, to help with the organizing stuff, because this is a new way to come together. We're not used to coming together in this manner, because you are picking a fight. And this is a big fight that people are picking when they do this kind of work. And again, we don't make light of it. We explain what people are up against. And so you're going to get knocked down more than you are actually going to be moving forward, and it's going to be very discouraging. But I think folks that do this work understand that they're driving at the heart of what makes the machine work. And it's about dismantling that machine and actually putting something together that's about people and communities and the environment, and actually putting us in a position to decide what that actually looks like. And so a lot of people say, well, doesn't that actually equate to something more about what democracy should be about? And so a lot of people get into this idea that we don't even really have a democracy today. And so this work has this edge about actually creating a more democratic community environment for our sake, for the environment's sake. And as Thomas was explaining, it doesn't just stop at the boundaries of Lane County or Benton County or wherever this stuff is happening, but eventually has to get up to that higher level, because you need that higher level to recognize the authority of the lower level at some point. There has to be reorientation of power. And so a lot of this is also getting at power. Where does power reside? Where has power always resided? And I think, unfortunately, we're running into a thing where power has always resided in the hands of the few, no matter what we've been sold or convinced that we have, or what liberties we've been allowed to enjoy, and how that should be enough. And so one more kind of visual, Thomas has mentioned that, you know, communities sit within a certain structure of what's allowable. And so our easy visual for it is that we call it a box of allowable activism. In essence, here's your box you've been allowed to play in. And so long as you don't step outside the box, you're fine. And so the best that we try to do within the box is to reach to the furthest parts of the corner without overstepping the boundaries of the box. And what's the box sided with? You take the screen as an example of the box. You have the preemption piece on one side. You have the Dillon's rule on the other side. You have corporate personhood rights on another side. You have other corporate constitutional rights on that fourth side. And that's not a static thing. It's a dynamic thing of which it's always constantly being squished down on you. So if you take the ag stuff, for instance, so you have this expansion of canola now being grown where the locals have said that's a bad idea. Or this there's legislation now at the state that makes even the state preemption stuff more explicit around local control. So in essence, actually pulling local control away around things like seed heritage, so seed saving stuff, saying you don't have the power to decide that, it's us, the state, that gets to do that. They already have that power, but they're making it more clear. So in essence, they're sticking you in the eye with it to make it even more clear that you have no power at the local level. And so the more we run into this, typically is more how communities start to decide to act outside of it. So in essence, it's turning your back on what is deemed to be the legitimate system to actually create the legitimate system. And so by participating in it, as Tomlin said, you're validating what it is. And these communities are saying, we're no longer interested in validating a system that doesn't actually give us a decision power to decide what happens. That's an unjust system. We're actually going to blaze a path to create a just system. And these Bill of Rights, these local ordinances, are the vehicle to do so. It's the collective way to do so. So it's in some ways, in my mind, an evolution from what we continue still to do, which probably still has merit around the civil disobedience individually, to actually to come together collectively to drive that change. And it's a very different manner when you actually use your local law as the lever to actually expose what is, in most cases, invisible. It's a different way to actually elevate that consciousness, that discussion, because it's all about behavioral change. It's about cultural change, really, is what this work is about. And you're using the law, in essence, to try to get that culture to catch up and backfill what we know needs to have happen. So that's what's starting to take place here in Oregon and the states of Washington, whether it's been Bellingham or up in Whatcom County or in Spokane, or it's beginning to take place in Portland on the Hawaiian Islands. So people out west are starting, in essence, to heed what's been happening back east and understanding that this is the pathway that we have to take ourselves in. So that's about all I had as far as any kind of a presentation piece. And I guess I'm interested to see what folks have to say about questions they may have, or actually how do you actually start something like this in your own community? Because it has to start somewhere. And it typically starts with a handful of people, like we know all these stuffs usually starts in.
Well, here within Lane County, we're just starting to get clear. We're up in Oregon against a single issue, which kind of limits how we phrase our community bill of rights.